That's about a minute into it. I'm going to get left of it.
Some really interesting story about Robert Johnson and his recordings and stuff like that. I can't recite it. You know, I'm not an expert in it. I can't recite it this late in the show. Mm-hmm. But there was a podcast where they were... No, was it Freakonomics? But they went down and tried to track down some of the story. Because, like, you know, there's a rumor that Robert Johnson sold his soul to the devil and stuff like that, right? So he could play blues the way he
does. Is there?
Yeah.
There I had is. No idea. Yeah.
And they were trying to, like, verify some of these fables around Robert Johnson and whatnot.
That he sold his soul to the devil? Is that really something he needs verification? Well, no, he didn't.
But where the story came from, those kinds of things. Stop being a jerk skeptic for 1 minute.
Oh, we should talk about that. That little skeptic thing that came up. Thanks for reminding me.
Skeptic versus cynical?
Yes. So I was so I retweeted a picture that someone else had tweeted. I think actually some science thing I was
tweeted. Yeah, it was picked up by some real people.
Yeah. So it looked cool. The picture was of a bacteriophage.
A virus.
A bacteriophage is a type of virus. It's a virus that infects
not
bacteria.
Everyone knows that. Yes.
But a bacteriophage is a specific type of virus that infects bacteria, but it has a cool structure to it. It has like 5 feet and then a tower.
If you've ever seen a picture of a virus, it's kind of that, like, where it has this like diamond top and a cylinder and then like legs, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of, and this was like a high resolution, almost color photo, right? I mean, Greg assumed it was false color.
Right.
But, I mean, what the picture was a color photo of a virus. Like, if you had a teeny little camera, it could snap. And
it looked to me like, I mean, it looked cool. It looked to me like this is something that is, it probably took a lot of time, but it seemed to me something that was definitely possible with technology.
Right.
Probably a composite picture from scanning electron microscope that was then colored. I was like, yeah, that looks cool. That's a cool picture. I'll send it along. Jeff says to me, within, I don't know, about an hour or two, he tweets me, look, it's fake. I wasn't paying attention.
Well, no, first tweet was, I hadn't had confirmation.
Yeah.
But my first tweet to you, I believe I sent one saying, are you... sure?
Well, you said, yeah, you talked about the depth of it, which wasn't, I didn't really have time to look at it. It looked cool. It was on my feed. I retweeted it. Yeah. I was busy, really busy at work.
First I sent you I don't remember exactly what I said, but first I sent you a pretty skeptical tweet about, you know, this needs follow-up. Because for me, it looked so different from any electron microscope photo. And it had perspective in it, right? It had depth of field.
Yeah, the first tweet you said was, seems to be a hoax that it's a real image. That's the first tweet.
Okay. Maybe I didn't tweet before. But yeah. As soon as I saw it, the depth of field of the photo is what threw me off, because scanning electron microscope images don't have depth of field. You know, they don't have that kind of perspective to it. So when I saw the depth of field, I was like,
Which I just didn't even... It didn't even occur to me, nor do I think I would have picked that out anyway. I don't know much about photography. Right. And
so when I saw the depth of field, it threw me off. Like, and the low camera angle, right? Because like it was looking up at the virus.
Right.
And the low
camera
angle really... That is true. It was the depth of field and the low camera angle that really made me... It set my...
Yeah, that's the next thing you said.
So you were calling me cynical. That's what set off my skeptical.
No. That's not what made me call you cynical. Okay. You said, yeah, I'd say so. Depth of field and low camera angle made me think it was bullshit right away. And you sent me a photo of... You sent me a picture of a YouTube, I guess, probably... I think with that image in there. Because it was a computer. It was actually a computer reconstruction. Mm-hmm.
It was a guy who does 3D
animation. 3D computer animation. And so I deleted it from my feed. because, okay, I was proven wrong. And then I sent to you saying I thought it was a real image was dumb because the caption was real image. But I said, you know, colored added, but yeah. I guess it's just CG. I said that and I deleted the image. And then you tweeted me saying, it's okay, being a skeptic is hard. And well, that was what set me off, because that see, bothered me.
I don't think that should have set you off. I think that should have... It is hard to be a skeptic.
But it felt like you were... Now, this is really what this is the limit of text communication. Because...
We've talked before about how being a skeptic...
If we were talking... So. No, if we were talking to each other, mm-hmm. then this wouldn't have come across... Right. In tone as it did to me at that point in time.
I figured it was safe because we had previous conversations about how being a skeptic is hard. You have to keep your guard up all the time.
Right. But it felt to me like it was a little bit like saying, it's okay, being a skeptic is hard. Winky face. you weren't being a skeptic. No, you weren't saying that. But that's what it felt like in the limits of text-based communication.
But you understand.
No, I understand what you're saying. Okay. But at the time, you know,
I
was right off of work, mm-hmm. and I was just, you know, I was tired, and I saw that, I'm like, oh, God. I said, no. And, you know, I immediately said back to you, here's the text I said, boo, there's a difference between being a skeptic and a cynic. Because I think that still is true. Mm-hmm. A cynic is somebody who just, anything that comes across, he just won't believe it, period, until he has enough information. But a skeptic is someone who will generally believe things that come from seemingly reliable sources, but will not believe things that don't come, that disagree, but will change his opinion when the information comes to light. That's what happened to me. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm a skeptic. Right. It didn't seem to be impossible for that when it was presented to me the obvious information. Yes, I'm going to change my mind about it. That's being skeptical. Yes, that's hard, but that was not hard for me particularly to do.
Well,
I probably
didn't help matters because I was having fun.
Yeah.
I was playing off your whole calling it a cynic. And I'm like, it's not cynical when when everyone on the internet is trying to fuck with you.
Right. So you said on the internet, a skeptic has to be cynical because everyone is trying to. And I was like, well, but so you're saying that being a cynic is hard. I agree. Being a cynic is hard. If you have to be cynical.
No, being a cynic is easy. Because you just be a dick.
No, I find it hard to be. I find it hard to reject everything that comes my way. That's hard. And you said no, being a skeptic is hard when everyone's out to get you.
Right at that point, I was just having.
And
fun.
I said, what you clearly said meant you have to be a cynic.
At that point, I was just having fun.
And you replied at CBR Greg. I don't know what that was. I mean, that was the last reply.
Oh, that was a mistake. Yeah. Or something.
So, but my point was
that was my pocket. sending you a tweet.
Well, yeah, so my point was, yeah, I find being a cynic to be very hard because you have to let some things through. Otherwise, if you're constantly on guard against everything, you just become a bitter person.
I think I might have had a head start. I might have seen that photo from somebody else before I saw it from you, and I was already stewing that it didn't look just. It set off the spidey sense.
I admit I was busy. Mm-hmm. I'm learning a lot of things at work right now. I'm in that phase. It came through on my feed. I took a brief look at it. It came from came from a science source.
No, it was really being pushed around by real people.
And I just retweeted. I thought
Cool. I think Scientific American retweeted it. Mm-hmm. I think that's how I saw it. So I think the person who tweeted it, probably the same source that you used. I think Scientific America retweeted their stuff.
Yeah. So I mean it. I don't feel like I failed at being a skeptic there. I understand your point, and your point is valid, mm-hmm. but I wanted to bring it across not just as difference between skeptic and cynic, but also as there's a problematic relationship if you just go text-based versus if you're in the room with somebody and discussing mm-hmm. something.
Right.
It's evidence of that.
Sure. There's a line. I mean, there's a semi-fine line between skeptic and cynic, right? Because, you know,
well, there's things that a skeptic is cynical about.
Okay. Yeah.
But a skeptic is not cynical about all things. Whereas a cynic is right. skeptical.
Well, I mean, I've listened to skeptic type podcasts and stuff before, right? And one of their ongoing mantras is it's hard. To not be fooled. It's hard to not let your biases interfere. It's hard not to I don't know what else I want to say, but yeah. So, you know, you saw that from a thing. I mean, did it come across at all that it seemed like a too good of a photo? Or
no, I didn't have time to look at it carefully, but I don't know enough about photography. I don't think I would have picked out those things. I don't have enough experience in that area, so I'm relying on other people at that point.
Right.
It didn't seem to me to be something that was ridiculously impossible. So it seemed...
those were all the good hooks right there.
And it seemed to me to be something that wasn't also taking... I mean, it was just a picture of something that happens in... That pretty much we've seen other versions of it, of that picture.
Did you watch the video? It shows the whole virus landing.
Yeah, I didn't watch
it. And sticking its dick down into the and then pumping DNA into it.
That's a little extreme. I'm glad. Yeah, if I would have saw that, I would have definitely known. But I just saw a frame of an image, and it just seemed, you know, that's possible.
I think I linked when the virus is doing.
I mean, on second thought, it's a little too perfect. Right, I mean, it's a little too symmetrical.
I mean, the low camera angle is kind of impossible, right? It's always going to be from a top.
Mm-hmm. I suppose there's ways you can find to get something like that or interpolate that.
I mean, bacteria is so much bigger than a virus.
Yeah.
That even if you're like looking over the horizon of the bacteria, you're not going to get that angle.
Yeah.
Right.
But if you had enough angles, you could maybe interpolate what that might look like.
It's still CG then.
Yeah, still CG, but when we see a lot of space pictures, those are enhanced and interpolated. So that's not saying it's not an actual.
There's a difference between an artist rendition and real photos.
Yeah. Right, but you can, if you do a database interpolation, you can call it something. Approximating.
Hey, did Bill Gates ever send you that money for doing the survey?
He did.
Did he? Okay.
For
that Honda or whatever it was?
Yeah, he sent me $1 million for retweeting his tweet. I lost it, though. I spent it all on lottery tickets.
Sorry, I just had to. I'll be taking a fool sooner or later. Don't worry about it.
No, it is hard to be skeptical. And that's true. It is hard to be skeptical. It takes work.
Well, it's my job, right? Security. Yeah. I'm the security officer of the company, right? So, you know, everything that comes through, I pass through the "is this bullshit" filter. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just part of my job. It's part of my life. So I am cynical, right? Because I have to pass everything through a
bullshit filter. And I'm in the middle of learning stuff. So I'm sort of just being a sponge. So my mind space at the time is just, okay, be a sponge. So something happens, I'm not being skeptical.
Yeah.
My mind is not in that frame. So yeah, I mean, that plays into everything, right? I'm much more in the mind of taking things in. So it just worked.
Right.
That brings me to my other tweet that actually got two people favoring, which is cool. But I have to admit, it didn't. The idea or the wording of it didn't come from me. It was a post in a forum, but I couldn't even link to that. It was too long. But it was a forum that was talking about some of the ridiculous, because there's lots of really ridiculous, crazy. The someone chided me for calling it the Tea Party, because the Tea Party is not a monolithic institution. And I responded to them saying, you know, it's true, but the loud ones kind of are. And there are people on the Tea Party who are now so ridiculously anti-government and anti-science, but they're actually getting space. And not just space. I mean, you know, it's free speech. Everyone has space to say something. But they're getting promoted people are actually saying that these people have reason, and there are people who are getting elected or getting close to being elected who have these views. And this was, my tweet was, government chemtrail weather to Tea Party. Government chemtrail weather modification is totally believable, but factories spewing tons of carbon affecting the climate is stupid liberal bullshit. that's the space they're in. Mm-hmm. This kind of, you know, weird government project that's, you know, small and secretive, but we're just piercing it. That's totally fucking real. But this, the constant thing of hundreds of years of just spewing out carbon into the air.
Cloud cuckoo land. Yeah. There's no consistency. Right? It's cloud cuckoo land.
Yeah.
What about the fucking Supreme Court here? Where...
What about?
The Massachusetts law that banned protesters within mm-hmm. 30 feet of the door of an abortion clinic is unconstitutional because right. it prohibits free speech.
Yes.
I'm all about free speech. And I know free speech, this, that's a slippery slope. But if you can still hear the person 30 feet away, how are you prohibiting free speech by keeping angry anti-abortion people from blocking your entry to the abortion clinic?
Well, they're not allowed to block you.
Well, they can get arrested for something else, I guess, but...
But
before the law was passed, they had cases of that happening. And the
yes.
law helped with that because they had to stay outside the yellow line.
Well, I mean, the law is... Yes.
So I guess maybe they need new laws about...
But how forceful you can be. I mean, you can't get in the way physically of somebody. That's still illegal. And yeah, and that was never not illegal. What the Supreme Court were saying, and it was unanimous, by the way, but the Supreme Court said that making a space around a particular type of business...
It wasn't 20 miles, though.
It was still, I understand where the objection comes in and saying, look, this is a hard thing for people to do anyway. Making people be able to do this thing right near them just is, you know, it's unconscionable. Sure, but free speech is about protecting the ability for people to be unconscionable. So you have to let that go, or else it turns into a situation where things get curtailed for other reasons, and then you have a whole Byzantine area of law that shouldn't be there in the first place. I kind of agree with the ruling. I kind of think, yeah, I mean, I don't find it socially acceptable for people to be spewing that shit all around abortion clinics. That's absolutely true. Do I think that means that we should erect areas where you can't have free speech? No. So I kind of get the ruling. It makes sense to me.
But
it's not
how
ideal.
How far does speech carry? I mean...
So speech is just speech. Speech carries as far as, you know, if you just do speech, it's just speech. It carries as far as the person does without being physically altercating.
So you're saying if they weren't a protester, they could be anywhere. Because they are a protester, they were being sequestered outside this zone.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine if everyone is... Yeah, okay, I get it. Because I was going to say it's fine as long as everyone is reasonable and sane. But that's a different law, right?
Yeah.
That's... So, okay. And then what was the other big Supreme Court
thing? There was the Arrow ruling... There was the ruling against president's executive powers, but there was another one.
There was one before the executive powers one. There was the...
It was a good ruling. I'm trying to remember what it was. It was a ruling that we agreed with.
Oh, it was Utah Gay one?
Is that, yeah.
Yeah.
That was federal. That was federal appeals court.
Yeah.
Now, there was something else.
Something else the Supreme Court did the same day they did the abortion one.
Yeah. I'll look it up.
But it was another noteworthy thing. It was, shit. SCOTUS blog, save me.
All right. Need to talk or something because it's
gonna be... I thought maybe news. You actually went to SCOTUS blog, or
mm-hmm.
I thought you were just going to look for Supreme Court news and it'd be.
I probably should have, but I went to SCOTUS blog. I did. That was the first place I went to. The thing about the president was about Recess appointments.
Recess appointments, yeah. That's another good ruling. It's a good ruling because...
In general. I think the current political climate, I understand why Obama did it.
Yeah.
But I don't like the precedent it sets.
Yeah. I mean, he did it because Congress was being insane.
Digital privacy is about cell phones.
Oh, yeah. That's it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so... Obama started doing these recess appointments because he couldn't get any appointments through Congress, mm-hmm. Senate, whichever one it was.
It was the Senate, which it is not a problem now, but it was because they had adjusted the filibuster rules for appointments. Right. But so, before that, there was 60. The filibuster applied, but there had never been a Senate where that was considered, where everything would be not quite filibustered, mm-hmm. but put on. People had the ability to say the Senate rules were weird, but they had ability to say they would filibuster it, and therefore it just became it just
so then Obama someone on his staff said, hey, we can do these things, recess mm-hmm. appointments, right? So when they go on recess for summer break or for Christmas or whatnot, we can appoint these things. So then the Senate started
not actually going into recess,
never going into recess, right? They would have these pro forma fake sessions where they would open it, have no business, and close it. Mm-hmm. You know, three guys would be there. And then, so trying to block the recess appointments. So, yeah, it's a good ruling because the president shouldn't be able to use these recess appointments. But if that's the only way he can get votes, like if he can't get someone voted on.
We can't get somebody into a position because no one will vote on it.
Well, right. If he can't get the Senate to do a vote on an appointment, then he kind of had to do this, right? Yeah. I mean, so if you're going to block the executive branch from doing recess appointments like this, you know, unintentionally, because, I mean, the spirit of the law is very clear, right?
Yeah.
It's the Congress is on recess and it's going to take them a month to get everyone back on horse and buggy and you need a Secretary of Defense.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? You can do a recess appointment. You know, that's very... That's the spirit of the law, yes. Right? And because of today's technology, the law is pretty arcane. But if you're going to keep him from doing that, I think the Supreme Court also has to mm-hmm. make sure the system fucking functions like it's supposed to.
It's weird because we look at other... If we look at other countries that have different forms of government, we look at them and we look at them as is quite odd. Like, for example, we look at Iran. Iran has a legislative, you know, parliament style government and a president, but they also have this sort of ruling clerics that mm-hmm. can rule on. And we think that's quite odd, but when you think about it, it's not that far off from what the Supreme Court is. We have a president. We have a legislative then branch, but there are also these weird people in robes who rule on whether these things are, you know, can work or not.
Mm-hmm. They have a constitution.
The constitution is not so much mm-hmm. the arbiter as it yeah. is the cultural opinion of the people who are in those robes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so there is this weird kind of American clerical class, and that's the judges. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting artifact of society.
Right.
But we, at least the current view is that it's sort of necessary to have a split of powers.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, it's as I'm an adult, it kind of amazes me still how short-sighted Congress is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all about getting that next election.
Congress is kind of designed that way.
Yeah.
The House of Representatives, every 2 years they're up for election. Mm-hmm. Every 2 years. And the Senate is a longer term. The Senate is 6 years. So they don't have to think about election.
Well, Congress term's 4 years, right? They're just offset.
No. The House of Representatives is every 2 years. Every 2 years is a complete re-election of the House. Every two. The Senate is every 6 years, but there's offset in thirds. Okay. So there's a third of it A third of them are up every 2 years. But it's a different third. They have 6-year appointments.
Okay.
And the president is 4 years.
Yeah, it's we almost need you know, there's no one looking out for the long-term health of the country, right?
I wouldn't say there's no one looking out for the long-term health of the country. Right now, there's considerably less concentration on it but that's kind of always the case. You know, Keynes said, in the long run, we're all dead. People are going to focus on the present.
Mm-hmm.
People and elections tend to be more emotional affairs than they are logical affairs.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that makes sense. I mean, no one is going to take a sacrifice now for something 200 years down the road.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Very few people.
Very few people. No one's going to take it for 200 years down the road.
I don't know. There are the people who are in the voluntary human extinction movement, right? Mm-hmm. Who say that they're not going to kill themselves, but they are saying they're not going to have kids. And the reason why they said it is because they're thinking about the future of the planet or whatever. It's silly, but there are people who think on that range.
And then how many, adults, 40 plus are going to worry about 50 years out? A few, but sure. Less than half. Take a sacrifice today for better 50 years from now?
I mean, I'm willing to do it on a certain level, but it's not on a full level. I mean, it depends on what you're talking about. Am I willing to take more taxes if it will help things be better in the future? Yes. I'm willing to take 100% tax? No. there's limits on how far you can stretch me, but I can understand a reasonable. But then again, I applying a bit of skepticism to it, I'm also sort of trying to apply a bit of, at the same time, I think I'm applying a bit of a positive outlook and saying, things should get better and maybe I can help a little bit. There's nothing wrong about that, but it varies. It can vary from day to day how much I'm looking at the future or not.
Right. Yeah, where I'm going. It's just like the Supreme Court is appointed lifetime appointments.
Mm-hmm.
Because it gives this stability to the I hate to use the word morals, but
what it is it's less affected by culture. Mm-hmm. But it also means they can get really stuck in a morass. They can get stuck in their ways and not see the way that culture is pointing.
Mm-hmm.
I think,
they want to avoid fads, right? I mean,
yeah.
What if gay marriage is a fad? It's not. But I'm just saying, what if, they want to avoid fads.
And I mean, the Supreme Court has made some terrible decisions.
The beginning of this conversation was we almost need some policy people that,
lobbyists?
I'm not saying it's easy, but I mean, think of a lifetime appointment, direction of the country, that kind of thing, but it probably doesn't work. But
no, I mean, you have people already who are effective lifetime appointments anyway, people who have been senators 6 times. I mean, that's 36 years.
Yeah.
There is something to say for both sides,
mm-hmm.
but when the full force of the country is behind something, and I think equal rights for gay people is something that the full force of the country is culturally behind, it's going to take something huge to stop that momentum.
Right.
So I don't, so yeah, and I just made a bang. I'm sorry, everybody. I don't know how. I mean, I can understand how old people can just say, poo-poo it. And the Supreme Court is, by its nature, a bunch of old people. The youngest guy is like the Chief Justice. So.
Yeah.
Right.
We need better, faster computers so we can simulate, policies and things like that, so we can have a better idea of, what the outcome would be. Like, let's try the conservative way. Let's try the liberal way.
You think that people would? I mean, we have now better, faster computers that are simulating climate, and half the political spectrum doesn't believe it. Mm-hmm. So why do you think simulating policy would be any different?
I know. But wouldn't it be nice to, like,
well, they don't actually believe it because it doesn't comport to their version of reality.
Wouldn't it be nice to prove which way is the best way and just do it?
I'm like, you can never prove something. Not to that level.
You could simulate it out. You'd have enough reason.
You can simulate it out and give a say, you know, within a reasonable margin of error, you can say, you know, I can give 98.98% certainty, and I would say that's pretty good. You know, I would say
it's better than any other method we have right now.
Well, it depends what you're talking about. It depends what field you're talking about.
I mean, talking about particle
physics. We're talking about, we're looking at 5 sigma. That's five. Right. That's 6 nines. That's 1 in 310 billion% chance. That's.
I hear you. I'm just saying, you know, it's like, you know, like, just the classic two-sided argument of, like, higher taxes, lower taxes, you know, give the money to the businesses, put the money in the programs, you know. It's like, let's just simulate this out and see which one works.
The whole problem, I think, with that entire argument is that neither of those are successful on their own. And they're certainly, I mean, they're successful to one degree, but not to another. They're successful at promoting something, but then there's detrimental in other ways. The whole problem is figuring out how do you combine the two
right
in the right way to promote the best thing. And that's that's a simulation that I don't know if it can be done. And if it can be done, it's certainly going to take a whole lot more effort than we have right now.
Yeah, you're right.
So we're doing the simulation on ourselves. Yeah, so we're just kind of seeing what happens. I gave your kids balloons with LEDs. We talked a little bit about that. So I saw them I forget where I was, but it was on one of those checkout shelves. It was like $2. I was like, yeah, young kids will like that. What the hell, $2. They have little things inside them because I broke one open. So they're balloons. They have a little thing hanging inside of it that has, you pull a tab when you pull it. So it's a little paper thing that you pull out.
Closes the circuit.
Yeah, it closes the circuit. And then there's a little thing, a little plastic thing that has a little LED and two little batteries in it. So I pulled it off because I was like, I want to see what this is. So there's little two batteries in it. You can change those if you want to, but you can't put it back in a balloon again.
Right.
But, yeah. So
you could if you had a balloon speculum so you can...
Right. Perform an abortion on the balloon.
No, just open it up. Put that thing inside without puncturing the balloon. Yeah, they're attached to the top of the balloon with a little, like, O-ring type thing.
Right, a little plastic.
And then they came with these goofy-ass stickers for deflating the balloon. I think they're worried about if you pop the balloon, it might go flying, and that harder, you know, the circuit board and stuff could poke out an eye or something like that, right?
Or injure somebody in such a way that they could get liable for it.
Yes, they put these stickers, these deflation stickers on it, which no one will ever use for anything. I gotta go pee really badly.
Okay.
All right, we're back.
I am wearing a pair of glasses. A pair of very, very dark glasses. These are number 14 safety shades. Number 14 is a really dark shade.
It says, so dark. Shade 14 solar eclipse glasses.
That you can view solar eclipses with them and not damage your eyes.
Are these welding glasses? Are they.
See, what it came from is I was asked by a friend if I would go to, you know, if I would dress up for a Halloween party. And normally I was like, normally I don't. You know.
You talked about doing Doc and Marty, right?
I thought of a good costume, so I was like, you know what? I think I can do this because I have a good costume in mind. So let me show you.
The problem is you're going to have to put lighter lenses into these things before you can actually wear them.
Well, I found...
on the top of the head.
Yeah, so I took a picture. So I was looking at glasses that you could shift, and so the ones I found in welding glasses, they were number 5. Mm-hmm. But as I was looking at them, people were saying on there, these are not good for solar eclipses. Mm-hmm. And that got me curious. Well, what is? And
number
these,
14.
Yes.
That, huh? Is it a linear scale, 5 to 14?
I don't know. I doubt it.
Yeah, probably not.
Probably not. But, you know, so those are just kind of, they're nice shades, but they certainly, you can't stare at a solar eclipse with them. Those glasses are about $6. These are 30.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You mean these ones here?
No. The ones I'm holding in my hands.
Oh, no, the fives.
The fives were $6.
Okay. Like that? Or you mean goggles like this? Or?
Goggles like that. Those were $6. Right. These plastic cheapo glasses with these shades.
They're not
really
cheapo. They're pretty sturdy.
I mean,
glasses.
They're sturdy.
Yeah.
But just getting that shade is expensive.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But yes, that's my Rick costume. I have a lab coat. I have glasses. I have a... that's going to make a big noise. I apologize. I have a big...
it's a good wig. You got
science there. Wig. Yes, a mad scientist wig and a flask.
Burp. How do you do the drool? How do you have the drool?
That's going to be hard.
You almost need blue.
It's only blue because it's stylized. You know, I mean, it's like his hair is blue, but his hair is really white. So I don't know.
But for the drool to show up, like, you know that like gel stuff they use on cakes and stuff, like the blue, like it's not icing, but it's like pastry gel or something.
I suppose I could do something like that. You remember the Doc and Marty thing?
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking of getting some of those truck nuts and hanging them and just figuring out, suck on my balls. Lick my balls.
Have those hanging on.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Here's that picture.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the bullshit picture of the virus. Bacteriophage. Yep.
Bullshit.
Yep. Anyway. Oh, it was, they watched a Lego movie today, kids. And I was asking a couple questions about some of the scenes, and I was explaining some of the nuance for, like, the scene where they're planning the plan to get the speakers and get the piece of resistance into the thing. And they're like, Batman's there, and they're talking about, like, having Bruce Wayne go in, right? Uh-huh. It's like, Bruce Wayne, who's that, right? And, like, all the people are, like, you know, standing there, like, you know, come on, Batman, we know you're Bruce Wayne, right? Well, Ellie didn't get that, so I kind of had to explain.
Of course not, no.
There's that silence.
There are jokes in there for kids, and there are jokes in there for adults. That's a joke in there for adults.
Yeah, but I explained it. She got it once I explained it to her, but she didn't know why there was that silence, right? And I also had to explain to her, like, when Emmett first sees Wildstyle, and he's like, you know, like... You know, he thinks she's really pretty, and he kind of froze up. She kind of, like, she didn't get that one.
No,
either, so
she's not at that stage.
Yeah.
She doesn't. Yeah.
Ellie made a double decker couch yesterday in Lego. So
awesome! Awesome. So I wanted to get into, or I wanted to talk about this app called Yo. Have you heard of this?
Yo.
You heard of this? You hear about this?
I'm not sure, but I went to check in on Foursquare yesterday, and the Foursquare app doesn't let you fucking check in anymore.
Good.
You have to use another app from Foursquare called Swarm to check in for your Foursquare?
Those were annoying as hell whenever, because they'd be expressed on your tweets.
Oh, I stopped tweeting them a long time ago. But yeah, I went to go check in on Foursquare. I was like, you can't check in with Foursquare. Mm-hmm. You have to use the Swarm app to check in. What the fuck? The app for the thing that you want to do no longer does the thing you want to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so Yo is an app that when you hear about it, it sounds fucking silly.
Okay.
The idea is you have your friends and you can just click on them and that sends them a Yo. And that's it. That's all you can do. You click on your friends, you send them a yo. It sends them a message that it sends them a thing that says yo. And your friends can click on you and send yo. And it goes yo. And that's it. That's all it does.
Sounds like a hookup app or something like, yo, what you doing? You want to fuck?
Yeah, I mean, when I first heard about this, I said, why the hell would I ever want that?
And then Damien told me to get it. And I thought, why the hell do I want that? I put it on my phone and I got yo's from him in real time. So yeah, why the hell do I want this? And then we both heard about Yo gets bought for $1 million. Because it got enough penetration that somebody was able to spend $1 million. So he bought it for $1 million. And we're like, that got $1 million? What is wrong with the world? Well, there are two things that strike me about this. Number one is that the reason why somebody would spend $1 million is because people have billions of dollars. And they're willing to spend 1/1000th of their... the amount of money they have, which is $1 million, is 1/1000th of $1 billion, and they'll spend that on something just to get the distribution of something, and it's nothing because you would spend 1/1000th of your current something on, you know, some ice cream or a candy bar, right? That's what it works out to.
So he goes to the candy bar,
basically. It hurts your head. There are people with that much money that $1 million would be life-changing to you, and they can just spend it like you would in a candy bar. And that's fucking ridiculous. But at the same time, there's something to be said for having that kind of liquidity out there to allow people to innovate and, mm-hmm. you know, make that. So it's a fucked up situation either way you look at it. But the other thing is that I realized as, you know, I introduced other people to it just to, you know, kind of... some like people in my D&D group I introduced to it just so I could fuck with them as much as Damien was fucking with me as any is. But I started to realize there's a business case for this. This has a point. Almost like, and I poo-pooed it originally, like I did Twitter, mm-hmm. because I didn't understand it at first.
Explain to me Yo does.
All right, so Yo sends out an instant, no character communication.
Okay.
To whoever you want it to be sent to. So what I'm thinking is, so the person who originally developed it says he wanted a way, or I think it was the guy who originally developed, said he wanted a way to text his secretary or something, tell him he needed her. And they're kind of sort of thinking along the lines of, well, you know, there is a certain case, like, okay, let's say you want to talk to someone, but it's very time dependent. You want to ask somebody a question, but that question will be useless in 5-10 minutes. You're at the supermarket. Mm-hmm. You yo somebody. You yo your wife to see if she's available right now to talk, so you can ask her if she needs something.
Okay.
You know, 20 minutes later, it's not gonna. If you sent her a text and she got back to it 20 minutes from now, it's not going to matter. You're not going to be at the supermarket anymore. So it's simply a way to say, hey, I have a question. Are you available? And for someone to say back, yes. What I look at sort of like a network handshake in a sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
You go to somebody, a computer goes to in networking, a computer asks another computer if they're available, and they handshake and say, yes, I'm available, mm-hmm. and then they start communicating. This is the handshake. This is asking if somebody's available for an immediate communication, and then you start communicating without bothering with SMS, without bothering with anything more than just saying, are you available? Yes, now we can talk.
Is it that much easier than saying, tell Heather yo, send?
It's along the same level.
Because, I mean, you could do that in Siri, right? Tell Heather yo.
Right. You could do that, but the nice thing about Yo is that if you establish up front that it's time sensitive, then someone can see a text and they're not sure whether to take, you know, to pay attention to send you something back. But if a Yo and you miss it, well, you say, all right, well, that wasn't really that important, you know, but I'm here right now and I got the Yo, then I can. So it establishes a different sort of, it's a different level of communication. It just says it's not for things that you really need to say, it's just for questions you have that are time dependent.
Okay.
And I think there's a value there that wasn't being exploited otherwise.
Okay. Twitter's fucked.
Why is Twitter fucked?
Twitter's not growing, keeps, it's, you know, flat or losing audience. Mm-hmm. And
I poo-pooed Twitter at first. Like I said, I didn't understand it. Now I totally get it.
Mm-hmm.
I totally get it. But you have to be judicious with it. There's a person in my D&D group who yo's me, who would yo all the time even after I explained how I think it should be used. And other people were agreeing, and he just decided to yo me incessantly anyway, so I blocked him. It's that easy.
Yo, yo, yo.
Block.
You want to score a bottle with the Kikachu?
No.
So you get him, it's in there, and you just flip this down?
Oh, I get it. I get the idea. You didn't put it in the vise.
No, but I really don't care if I get a good top off this Trumer mm-hmm. bottle or not. So there, now it's scored.
Now it is scored.
Pour some water on it, and it'll pop right off.
Nice. Any other thoughts? The only other thing that I can say is that I was asked by Nick, you remember Nick, to DM a campaign. He's DMing one now, but he really wants to play. He mm-hmm. is sick of being a DM. I mean, he's okay with being a DM, but he wants to also play his own character. Mm-hmm. And he asked me if I wanted to DM, and the first response I said was, I don't know if I'm ready for that right now. I just don't think I have enough experience to mm-hmm. DM. And he said, well, you know, just be a group of four of us. It's not going to be as big as the main D&D group, and you know, we'll ease you into it. But if you don't want to, but I really want to play a character, but if you don't want to, it's okay. And it's like, all right, I'll give it a shot. So it's been so far 2 weeks now of me DMing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The first time, what I did is I started with just a pre-made adventure. They have these modules, like they had in the mm-hmm. D&D episode of Community.
Right.
And that helped me sort of get an idea of how to do it. It gives you sort of broad, it gives you actually, it's a combination of sort of a broad idea of what's going on and also how to deal with individual levels of things. It gives you nice descriptions, tells you how to make encounters and tells you what's in the encounter, all the other stuff with it. And it gets pretty complicated pretty quickly. But I realized that, you know, there's actually ways you can tell really cool stories. And so I came up with a cool story. And the whole idea is that there's actually, in my story, there's one or two main characters, but the way it's going to be worked is sort of like there's a main storyline, but there are going to be a whole bunch of little tiny quests that they fill, and eventually it'll come to a head. But it's not just one little, it's not just one adventure. It's a whole bunch, there's a basic structure, and I'm kind of building little things as they go along. But it's cool. I mean, the whole idea is I can tell you, because no one's going to listen, but the idea is that...
You sure?
Yeah, I'm sure. I'll just give you broad strokes of it. I wrote down a draft of the idea, and I talked to some people about what their characters were. I tried to integrate that, and I looked at my draft, and I thought, wow, this really needs to be rewritten. So I rewrote it altogether. I have a whole now second draft, and it would probably need to be rewritten again. But it's better formulated now. It's like about six pages or so that I have written.
And I'm guessing you used your storytelling steps in the...
No, because what I'm building is the background.
Okay.
I'm building where I want it to go ultimately. But I can't build that progression of the story because that's based on them. It's based on how they work through it. I know where it's ending. I know what the background is, and I know where they're at, mm-hmm. but they tell me and they decide how they go about it. And if they want to ignore it completely, then I can't do anything about that. It's their,
right.
It's their game. That's how I got thinking about Job. I was like, you know, it's kind of the opposite. Job is forced to be in the story, whether he likes it or not. These guys aren't, mm-hmm. but I think the story I've made is kind of a cool. It's a cautionary tale in a sense. Is be careful what you wish for. It's a guy who wants a lot of power and finds a source of it ultimately, but is destroyed by it in the end. Fairly conventional mm-hmm. story, ultimately, but aren't they all? Mm-hmm. But it's about the sort of the intricacies of that story and providing that, just providing a nice skeleton for them to do their adventures on. At the same time, there's being an interesting background that they'll absorb as they come to it. They just met one of the main characters. It's going to take months and months, because we play once a week, if that. Mm-hmm. It's going to take months and months for them to get to the point where, you know, it's near the end of the story. But it has a pretty climactic beat at the end. They're not going to be able to defeat a guy. He's going to end up defeating himself. But it'll be cool. They'll be a part of that.
I see. Cool.
Yeah, it's neat. It's flexing that thing I don't get to do, which is it's flexing both the storytelling part of me, and the improv stuff is helping me too, because there's improv, because you don't have everything planned. I mean, you can try to plan for things, but you can't plan for everything. So you get in situations where, like, they just decided, two of the guys decided to be in a bar fight. And, all right, I got to play along.
Yes, and.
Yeah.
Channel your Tobias Freke.
You know, I'll yes and along with them until I get to a point where either my sensibilities or the dice say it was unsuccessful, and then the game's afoot, and then we play the game.
How much do you, so, you know, your session ended.
Yeah.
Bar fight had started.
Right.
Are you going to spend this week working?
No, the bar fight was very minor, but... how much do I manipulate things if they aren't going? A little bit, some ways, a little bit other ways. There was a situation where it looked like the party was going to wipe. The party was going to be a TPK, or was going to be really close to it. And I changed... What?
I think using TPK. Lingo.
Total party kill. Everyone's going to die.
Okay.
And I didn't want that to happen... So there were a couple situations that I manipulated so that they didn't all die. Only one of them. Because you don't die just by losing all your health. You get to a point where you're dying, mm-hmm. but you can still be saved. But if everybody dies, and game over. But there was one or two roles that I changed. But I also changed roles to be more challenging at certain mm-hmm. points. I had changed a role that was not a hit from a character to a hit to add something to it. So, you know, it goes both ways. I was, you know, I'm trying to give them an interesting route to play, not frustrate them, at the same time giving them some bit of challenge. But also keeping in mind, in the back of my mind, that everybody likes to feel a little bit overpowered. So letting them have that as well.
Okay.
It's a hard road to tread, and I'm still learning.
Sure.
I'm still learning all about it. But it's interesting. I mean, I find myself, you know, at times when I wouldn't normally care about that sort of thing, but now I find myself really being interested in developing a story. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Hey, look. These 6-point UPCs.
Buildings, huh?
Not just buildings.
Oh, Statue of Liberty.
There's Statue of Liberty on there.
Hmm.
So it's not just Sunitas that's doing it.
Yep.
That's cool. All right, that's all I have.
I think it's time to wrap this.
Sounds like it.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We didn't do Amazon Anonymous. Do you want to do it? Or?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, what do you got?
I chose something that struck me because it was interesting, and I look at it, and wow, it strikes me as almost kind of medieval and terrible, but at the same time, I get it. It's Victor's out-of-sight mole trap. Look at that thing. It's a medieval torture device of a sort to just, you know, take them all and just fucking whack it to death.
I don't even see that on here. I'm doing the...
It's in the garden area. Yeah, I'm doing the... I usually look at the... What is it? I look at the earnings.
Okay, I'm looking at orders this time. I don't see that one on here. I'm going to go with...
Somebody needs to protect their garden from moles. And I get it, you know. At a certain point, you stop caring about those dumb little moles. You know, yeah, they may look cute and stuff, like, but they're just pests. And so, yeah, just get rid of them. And it looks awful. It has
good reviews, it looks like.
Yeah, it looks awful, because you wouldn't want it to, you know, on something you care about, but you don't care about those fucking moles. They're just messing up your garden. I get it. You know, the universe is not protecting moles anymore. It's protecting you.
Like those fucking evil spider robots from that Tom Selleck movie. remember talking about that?
Yeah, the '80s movie, right?
Yeah, but we talked about that a long time ago, and we couldn't remember what it was. But it looks like the fucking evil robot spiders.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
With the needles.
Runaway.
That's it. I'm going to go with... Find it here. Yep, that's it. DS Laboratories Revita Hair Growth Stimulating Shampoo. New 500 milliliter bottle. So, shampoo that makes your hair grow. Yes. So, I told the story before. I don't know if you remember, but...
Gene Simmons.
Caught this movie on like some Saturday afternoon TV movie type stuff, or maybe in the evening on HBO. Maybe I think that was it. And kind of caught some of it, but wasn't supposed to be watching it. My dad was watching or something. And man, those robot spiders with the needles freaked me out.
Yeah, it probably looks quaint today. You look at like toys today.
So, half a liter of hair growth shampoo, $38.12, gets 3.5 stars with 18 customer reviews.
Oh, my Lord. I don't know if this is the actual, like, poster or something, but the lines here are great. So, it's a picture of Tom Selleck and whatever bimbo was with him holding futuristic, I suppose, looking guns because they have more metal on them. That makes them futuristic. Mm-hmm. The lines are, "It is the future," in big red. "Machines intended to do our work are being programmed to turn against us. Someone must stop the madman who started it all." Yes. Wow, that's 80s for you.
All right, so tell me about the hair growth shampoo, hair vitalizing shampoo. Where's the description? No matter how long or how intense your hair loss is, how long your hair loss is? That's just not a word you want to use when you're talking about hair loss. Using Revita on a daily basis will improve the vitality of your scalp, maintaining the quality of your hair and stimulating new hair growth. Yes. Tom Selleck holding a baby.
Holding a baby.
Gotta save the baby from the evil spider robots. Greg hates review readings, but here we go. 1 star.
He's holding on to a baby. That's like the universal symbol of he's a good guy.
I have been using this super expensive shampoo for the past 5 months, every day and exactly the way it's mentioned. But it has not helped a bit. Instead, I feel my hair is more thinner now. I had lots of hopes on it, but I won't use it anymore after the current bottle finishes. 4 stars, no harmful chemicals. Skeptical at first, but it works at retention and continued use. Healthier scalp after 2 weeks, in my experience.
See, that's the problem. You can't just be skeptical at first. Yes. You got to always be skeptical.
Not a lot of lather. Kind of hard to rinse out, but leaves a nice shine and very manageable
mane. Oh my God, that was on the poster.
Discontinued use due to travel. So good luck to you, Mr. Person who's trying to save his hair with the shampoo.
That was the poster. That was on the poster. They might need to explain that kind of shit in movies back then in the 80s. You had to kind of give a brief summary of what your movie was. You couldn't just...
What did Runaway gross? That's the question.
All right, I'll find out.
Do you like how Greg completely ignored me going over reviews?
I do. I like it. I noticed too.
I think everyone else probably did as well. 1984, Runaway. Not to be confused with the 2006 TV series.
Really? Was it written by Michael Crichton?
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Tom Selleck, Cynthia Rhodes, and Gene Simmons. Gets 5.9 stars on IMDb.
She had that dumb 80s hair. Everyone does at that time. A big poofy. The 80s are so weird. Everyone's on coke.
Goofs. When Sergeant Ramsey goes in to rescue the baby, the rogue robot is
the baby.
Heard to cock a shotgun several times before firing its weapon. The weapon, however, is a revolver and could not possibly produce the sound we hear.
Okay, let's see. Box office mojo. Total domestic gross. Tell you what. You tell me what you think of it. I'll tell you whether you're high or low.
1984. Made.
Remember your 1984 dollars.
$1.2 million.
That's domestic total gross?
Sure.
Okay. They have a budget? I don't know. I don't see a budget. The domestic total gross. The opening weekend, it made $1.2 million.
Nice. Good for them. Tom Selleck was a big name back then.
Yeah.
It was 99 minutes.
The total gross, $6.7 million. Kind of a moderate hit, I would say.
Mm-hmm. It was a...
Or maybe not. It opened at number 7. So, no. I apologize. No. It's not a hit. I was wrong about my money.
It was nominated for the Saturn Award by the Academy of Science Fiction, Fantasy, and Horror Films. And Best Support... Christy Alley was in there. Best Supporting Actress.
From the Saturn Awards, not Oscars.
From, yeah, the Science Fiction, Fantasy, and Horror Films USA.
Which is, you know... Oh, shit! We didn't talk anything about Game of Thrones.
Well, we didn't turn off the recording yet, so...
Well, yeah, I'm just saying, we didn't talk about it.
Oh, shit.
What'd you think?
I think I was surprised.
Oh, damn it, Thump. I'm sorry. Thump.
I was surprised that they tied up a bunch of storylines and kind of packaged it up for a break, which was nice.
Mm-hmm.
Not,
I mean, what stories did they tie up?
They combined.
They tied up the Hound and Arya's story line in Westeros, mm-hmm. and moved Arya on. I guess they tied up Tywin Lannister's story because he's dead.
Right. I mean, I'm saying they reduced the number of active storylines, right? With
combined two of them. They combined the Wall and Stannis.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then you have the Hound, Arya, and...
Brienne?
I mean, Brienne's still looking for her, but I mean, they...
Brienne is now...
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, they moved Arya on, killed off the Hound. At least that's the assumption.
Mm-hmm.
It's not known even to book readers if he's, you know, if he's... Dead, but I think the assumption is yes, he's dead.
I don't know, I'd be upset if he survived, you know.
They, you know, obviously Tywin's dead, but I mean, they just moved characters on, right? They moved, they moved Tyrion on to a different area. They moved Varys on to a different area. They didn't really wrap up storylines so much as they changed the status quo considerably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, Daenerys' storyline isn't wrapped up at all.
Well, no.
It's just getting started. The Stannis storyline as well is not wrapped up so much as it's taking on a different tone.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, Okay, so I don't know. It just seemed like Arya, right? Not a cliffhanger, right? She's starting a new adventure,
right? Right.
You know, so that's kind of tied up. You know, that's kind of what I meant. It's like, there's no real cliffhangers. They've kind of packaged up a lot of the storylines for a break,
right? Yeah, they didn't leave. Yeah, they didn't leave anything. Like, you know, what's going to happen next? It's more like you have a bit of a breather to take in how much things have changed. And that things are going to be different now.
Mm-hmm.
But this is sort of it's a lull in the action. It gives you a little bit of that, like, okay.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's part of it. Tying up a couple storylines, but also wrapping up a chapter or a book. You know, they're like, okay, we're going to be off for a year.
But, I mean, it suits it because this was the end of the third book.
Mm-hmm.
So, that, you know, the third book was jam-packed. That's why it took two seasons to do. It was just, had the Red Wedding, had the Purple Wedding, it had all these things happening. It had Stannis at the Wall, it had Arya and the Hound, it had Tywin getting killed by Tyrion.
Mm-hmm.
It had everything. It was a jam-packed book, and it was the best book in the series.
Tyrion killed Tywin with Joffrey's crossbow.
Yep.
Nice.
Joffrey. It's not you, Jeff. So it was a great season. I thought I like the things they did at the end. You may have heard some of the online stuff about Lady Stoneheart. I don't think it's that big a deal. It wasn't covered. There was a character who was in the books. Stop listening now if you don't want to hear. But by now you've probably already heard about it if you care about Game of Thrones and you've been able to be on the internet at all lately, which Jeff hasn't. So the character of, and some book readers were expecting this to happen, the character of Catelyn Stark,
mm-hmm,
died at the Red Wedding. We were introduced last year to the Brotherhood Without Borders, including one guy who was a priest of the fire god, like the Red Lady, another guy who kept dying and was being somehow resurrected by that guy. Do you remember that at all?
No, I don't know.
It was a minor storyline in season 3. The Hound fought him and killed him, but then he was brought back to life. Well, it turns out that they found Catelyn's body, and then that priest sacrificed himself to bring her back.
Okay.
So she comes alive, but she has a slit in her throat. She can't talk, and some of her humanity is gone, and she is just out for revenge and killing Freys left and right. The Freys are the people who, you know, mm-hmm, kill her, and she's called. She takes the name Lady Stoneheart.
Okay.
So people thought that would be the end of this season. Book readers thought everyone's going to be amazed because Catelyn Stark's going to be back, but she's a zombie or, you know, whatever she is. And it didn't happen. And then lots of book readers like screaming, "Hey, you know, where is Lady Stoneheart?" But I was like, you know, it's okay. You know, I don't. That storyline hasn't really had an impact on the books at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether it's going to or not. It's just sort of it's one of many hundreds of side stories that are going on.
Right. The zombie Catherine, huh?
Yeah.
Nice.
But, you know, then they had to have Michelle Farrelly on again. You know, mm-hmm, they have to get it.
Yeah, I mean, there's, like, logistics, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a
if
lot...
If it was radically important to the story, then it's necessary. But it's not. At least not at this point in the books.
Yeah.
And the guys who run the show know how it's going to end. Because they've talked to George Martin, the guy who writes it. They know... Okay. How it's going to end, because they're probably going to end before he does. So, but also the TV show is different than the books. They follow the same basic path, but it's a different show.
Well, there's a lot more logistics, right? I mean, it's just
the characters are slightly different in the books than they are in the show. They're following the same template, but they're different beasts.
Mm-hmm. Right. I'm just thinking, like, you know, other big HBO shows like Deadwood, right? And they never did the Deadwood movie because they couldn't get the talent back right. together. You know, that kind of thing, right? Arrested Development was... It's amazing that they got the Arrested Development staff back together.
And they had to do a lot of green screen shots for that to work and stuff like that. Because they couldn't... Because, yeah, getting everybody together at the same time was nigh impossible.
Yeah. So, you know, pulling back Catherine Stark for a small plot point that's inconsequential, no matter how cool it would be for... You know, Zombie Stark to show up every once in a while. You just can't get an actress, you know, for one episode a season, for 10 minutes a season type thing, so. Unless she's really bored.
Unless she's really bored or she's not, doesn't have a lot of things active to do, which Michelle Farrelly is probably neither of those.
Right.
All right, I just wanted to get that over with because I wanted to see what you thought of it.
Need zombie Jeffrey.
Joffrey, yeah. Zombie Joffrey would be interesting. But no one is putting any effort into resurrecting him.
Bummer.
Yeah, Joffrey was a cool character. Character you love to hate. And I love actors who can play that so well that you sort of viscerally feel that hate, but then you realize, wow, that's an actor doing that. That's awesome.
Yeah. He's just a kid. I mean,
well, I mean, no, he's a young adult or something.
Yeah, he's playing an asshole kid.
Yeah.
All right, now I think we're done.
All right, talk to you guys next week.